Hey everybody, it is Nick here again from Grayscale Gorilla, and welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Now, if you haven't checked out the Grayscale Gorilla podcast, please head on over to iTunes. We have tons of episodes already up over there. However, this episode will be a little bit different than what you may be used to. See, what happens is every Monday or Tuesday, Chris and I and Chad from Grayscale Gorilla, we hop on a phone call, kind of a video hangout, and we talk about some of the things we're going to do this week. We talk about big projects we're working on, some of the plugins we're building, and some of the tutorials we're going to put out. And we figured, why don't we, after that phone call, why don't we stick around and record a podcast and talk about some of the other things, other than Cinema 4D and After Effects, some of the other tools and tips and things that kind of help us become better motion designers. And so what you're about to hear is the first version of that. We recorded that phone call and we get into things like our favorite productivity apps. We talk about upcoming Half Res, which is coming really soon in Chicago, which is our motion graphics and motion design event. So don't forget, if you're in Chicago, to stop by there. We also talk about some of the other things that have kind of influenced us over the last few weeks, things that kind of inspire us to do really the work that we do. So anyway, let's head on into the phone call, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast episode. All right. Well, hey guys, welcome to the new this trial format here for the podcast. How's everyone's week been?
Busy.
Yeah, super busy.
It was Labor Day weekend. Did you guys do anything fun?
Yeah, I celebrated my dad's 70th birthday.
Oh, that's awesome. Yep. Congrats, man.
Yep.
That's exciting.
Which is kind of freaky when your parents start to get up into those kinds of years.
That just happens, doesn't it? You just look at your parents, you're like, wow, when did you get old? When did that happen?
I know,
and then you realize you did too.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, yeah. I swear to God, we just had his 60th party, like, feels like 2 years ago.
That's bonkers.
It's nuts, man.
Well, we're all gathered here. We figured we hop on a phone call once a week to talk, what we're doing in Grayscale Gorilla and what tutorials are coming out. And we figured, let's fire up the cameras, let's fire up the mics, and start talking. So let's see how this goes.
We're here to talk shop.
Yeah, I mean, so what's been going on in Cinema 4D motion graphics news this week? Anything happening?
Well, besides R18 coming out officially for everybody.
Well, of course. There you go.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Big one right there.
So by the time this comes out, people should be at least getting their versions of R18. And it was announced about a month ago. And man, I've been digging all the new stuff. What's everyone's favorite new feature so far?
Well, everybody's going to talk about the new fracturing. So I'll just go in and say the knife tool.
Oh, he's going deep.
So explain to me what's for us, obsessed with fracture and doing nothing else for the last month. Tell me what's new with all the knife stuff.
Oh, geez, there's so many things. I mean, and it's fairly technical, but like the knife tool is built in now where you can do multiple cuts. In fact, when you hit K for the shortcut of knife, it pops up with three sub knife tools. Where you be cutting holes, cutting straight through the object, doing multiple slices. There's so many different things when it comes to it. I can't even go into it right now. It'd have to be a full tutorial, but there's a lot of really nice features in it.
Now, some of that stuff's in our intro or our What's New series. Is that right, Chris?
Yep. I think I did cover the knife tool on that, so that's a good place to start.
Yeah, we also have some tutorials coming out for R18 specifically in the next a few weeks or so. We dropped one late last week. It was that rose kind of shattering and moving around.
If you
haven't seen
cool.
that one, mm-hmm. Chad, it's good to have Chad around. He's got sweet ideas like that. It's like, why don't you fracture something that doesn't break? Like, oh,
I was going to suggest maybe like an eagle comes in and grabs the rose and lands on a skull and then turn it into like the world's most ultimate tattoo or something.
Yeah. I think
you're overestimating my abilities, Chad.
I'm really excited to see, like, I think what I'm already starting to see in just having R18 out for not a very long period of time is what people are doing with the stuff that, because we've had it for a while, because we were on the beta And so we had access to it for quite a while. And I think when you're on the beta and you have access to something early on, you find yourself kind of just doing similar things to what everybody else is doing with it. And when it gets open to the public, it's then when you see like, oh, I never thought about even trying it like that or using this tool that way. And I think I'm already starting to see some videos pop up and whatnot of people using Fracture for interesting things. And I think that's the most exciting thing for me, and is just seeing like where it goes after it hits the public. Cause I think, like, you know, after you're on the beta forum and you like see the same kind of thing over and over again, it's exciting to see like, oh wow, like that's a really cool use for that tool. I didn't think about that.
Well, see, that's your problem. You spend time on the forum.
I know.
You just got to have no influence from anybody.
Just like that, shut myself off from the world.
Well, that's a worry of mine for this podcast, is that I am not as plugged in on like keeping track on Twitter and Facebook and all the various things for what the industry is up to. Like I tend to stick a little bit more technical or maybe even insular on that. So I'm going to be learning a bunch of stuff from you guys.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So I guess with that in mind, you know, as 18 comes out and everyone starts playing around with it, we're going to see some really cool stuff. What have you guys seen over the last couple weeks? You guys been digging?
Well, there's that one thing I sent you with that dude. I will have to put his name in the description, but it was interesting. Like, you know how you can use objects to shatter other objects, but he was actually like live drawing a spline and literally like cracking and creating fragments on an object in real time by drawing on it, which I thought was, well, not necessarily drawing on the object, but drawing on that plane, you know, on that view plane. And I thought that was really cool.
Yep, that those kind of things, seeing how people, you know, use different tools together like that is really going to, you know, that reminds me of at Seagraph, watching Patrick Goski. I always say it's Goski, Goski. I always mess that one up. Sorry, Patrick.
Goski,
I love
maybe?
You. Goski. He used an emitter with the Fracture. So he dropped the actual emitter dots. With a regular old, you know, Cinema 4D emitter can be used as a Fracture. So it actually makes the pieces move. Mm-hmm. And it looks really, really cool.
Yeah, everybody was geeking out on that one. That was great. Yeah, all of the presenters were like, whoa, how'd you do that?
We didn't even know it could do that.
Yeah. Well, that's what made me animate the spline that I had in there. And remember, Chad, the kind of infinite twirling cycle?
Yeah.
Turned that to a GIF, but it's cool. Got some upvotes on Reddit.
And then earlier this week, Trevor Kerr was showing me some Houdini stuff, and because Houdini has some pretty amazing fracturing as well. And he was like, you know, fracturing in Cinema, you've been on it longer than I have. Can you do this, what I'm doing in Houdini, in Cinema? And what he was doing is he was like, basically, think about it like in Houdini, he had some objects spawning on top of a cube. And inside those objects, it would create a point cloud, which would then essentially create the Fracture. So I was like, yeah, you can do that. Just like throw a cloner and have a cloner become the object that's creating the Fractures. So I just threw like a sphere into a cloner, had the cloner spawn on the object that I'm fracturing. So then all the points are generated inside each individual sphere. And you get this like really cool like clustering of shards in very specific kind of places. Just keep hitting like random seed to get different effects. That was pretty cool. Like just.
Well, I know we brainstormed a little bit about this earlier, but maybe we should combine all these little tips into a video of like, you know, stuff, new weird Fracture stuff nobody has seen yet.
Right. No, that's a good idea, for sure.
Well, so, you know, this is our first kind of idea going through this as a way for all three of us to talk about this stuff. You know, I thought we kind of maybe have a question every week that we kind of talk about. And Chris actually had a really good one about some of the tools and kind of productivity apps that we use to kind of make sure we're staying on task, make sure we're getting stuff done. You know, we have a ton of After Effects, Cinema 4D tutorials coming out soon, but these kind of things are, you know, maybe not going to be videos down the road, but are as important to our workflow as I think some of those bigger tools. So I thought maybe we can kind of go through some of these things that keep us working. What are the other software things that you use to do this kind of stuff?
I think Chad should start out because he's going to have the most. So you could do this. You start and then do the middle and then do the end, and me and Nick can sprinkle a few in between.
Oh man. Well, I have that video that's going to be coming out soon that kind of goes over some of my favorite window utilities for that stuff. But if we're talking productivity, then for me, it's all about Todoist. Like, I think I turned you on to it, Nick. And Todoist is kind of this, it's a list, and we can put the link in the description, but it's basically, it's as complicated or as simple as you want it, as far as like making a list of things that you need to accomplish and check off. And you can make it as simple as like creating, you know, a grocery list, or you can dive really deep and create projects and calendars and priorities and really get as crazy with it as you want to get. And like literally every day I have set up so every day I come in and I look at my computer and I open up Todoist, and I have reoccurring tasks that happen every day. So like the first one is like check our website comments. Second one is like catch up on email. Third one is, I think, I have another one at 5 o'clock, work on a beta. So like I'm on a couple different betas for different softwares. And so I try to spend at least a half an hour working on one of these betas. So every day I try to like, I feel like I get something done by like checking these checks off. So Todoist.
Yeah, Chad, you turned me on to Todoist, and I love it. I actually do a lot of those reoccurring tasks as well. Just things I've been trying to do every day, even just in general, you know, like you said, email, but also like exercise, those kind of things. I just put them on there to remind me, like, what are the things I want to try to pull off every day. It's really kind of eye-opening to look at a list like that. It's been huge. We've been using it too a little bit back and forth for some to-do stuff inside the company as well. I think we're going to look more into that.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. I would say that, you know, getting up to speed on it, you can really learn the ins and outs of it within like 15 minutes. So like, not a big deal. And then the other big thing for me is probably, I know a lot of people use Gmail, but I started using Inbox, which is kind of the simpler. I think it's where Gmail's gonna go. I think I've read some articles where Google is gonna probably phase out Gmail and sort of become Inbox. And I found that Inbox, I respond faster, and like I'm a little bit more on top of my email game because it's like way simpler from a UI standpoint.
Yeah, you kind of you push both of those on me pretty hard, actually.
And I have a tendency to do that.
I'm pretty reluctant. For any of you guys, by the way, before we get into this, if you want to see the show notes, we're going to have this up on the website under the podcast. We're going to try to include everything we talk about in those things. So if you don't know how to spell Todoist or not sure what we're talking about, check out the show notes either on our website or if we release this on YouTube as well, we'll try to include that. But you know, you pushed pretty hard to kind of move to Gmail, which I was very reluctant to. So
it wasn't even Inbox. You didn't want to do Gmail.
Yeah, you were against it.
Yeah, I'm kind of a little bit of a tinfoil hat Google skeptic. But using Inbox was a no-brainer. So slowly the things that I'm okay with Google is like opening more and more. I guess it was a very slippery slope for me. It's like, oh, let's put more stuff on YouTube.
Oh yeah, that's right. Now you're going to be full entrenched in the Google culture now.
You know, to me, being early with Apple, Macintosh, all that stuff in the late 90s, it was just always kind of a like, I need to put all my data in one place and only care about this one platform. And for me, it was Apple. And really, they still do a really good job for me. And when it was just me, when it was, you know, me and when basically I was putting up all the tutorials on the website, and only I had to worry about myself as a business, as a company, as anything, it worked great. But what I find with Google is as you build a team around something, Google just really gives you the ability to do that. So if anybody's out there listening or watching and is reluctant, maybe I could be a little pat on the back for you guys to say it's been really, really good. And the transition to Google has been really helpful for me personally and for the team and for everything we've been able to pull off. Yeah, I guess might be a separate video.
I'm glad we're recording this because I'm just getting this on video is very, it's amusing to me.
I'm curious if there are even others, Nick. You're the only person I've ever met that was very reluctant about Google ever. So you might be, you're like,
you
hey,
everybody, the last,
and you're the last one. Like, this is
what's
great.
The opposite of canary in the coal mine? It's like the last rock standing. Yeah, it was an obvious answer from everybody I asked. I'm like, hey, how do I get more organized and how do I do this? They're like, well, you use Google. I'm like, yeah. Well, but what if I don't? They're like, you're an idiot. So, yeah, I mean, maybe I am the last. But it's been really it's actually been eye opening. It's changed the way I structure my day. It's changed the way the team stuff happens. It's really been big. So I owe you a high five, Chad. Thanks for that one.
No, you can. That's all good. And then the one of my favorite features that's actually scary how useful it is and kind of frightening in how inhuman it is, I guess, is in Inbox, if you get an email, Inbox, and this, now don't freak out. This sounds a little bit Big Brother-y, but it's not. Essentially what it does is it starts to learn how you reply. So if somebody sends you an email and you're like out, maybe you don't have time to like write a huge reply, it gives you three choices, at least on the mobile app. I think it does it on the
web app on desktop too.
So it gives you three choices that are kind of like, it learns how you normally respond. And usually two of them are like an accepting response. And then the third one is like a no or something. So you can just like, dude, I can't even tell you how many times, like I've just like, bam, replied in one click. I'm like, I'm on top of this, you know, like it's
RoboChat.
Sure, that's great.
Yeah. And dude, now check this out. Like, so Google's about to announce this new chat application called Allo. So they're taking what they've kind of started with Inbox and moving it, because Google's never had a good chat application. Like, nobody's been able to touch iMessage in terms of like mobile, you know, chatting and texting and stuff like that. So they're coming out with Allo, which is going to have some of that built in. So if you were to like text me like, hey, do you want to go see a movie? Not only could I, it will give me choices of replies, and I don't even have to type. I can just be like, yes, no, or maybe next time or whatever it's going to say, but it'll actually, you can call up Google Assistant in the chat and it'll actually show you movie times. And then you can both agree right there in the chat window, which is kind of cool. But yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, pretty soon we'll all just be talking to robots.
Well, I'll add one for anybody that's doing production or, you know, basically anybody on a computer all day. This has been really helpful for me. It's called Rescue Time. Have you guys seen that? Rescue Time basically looks at every, you know, application you're using, every website you're heading to, and just kind of starts to mark down how long you hang out in all these places. And what I would recommend is just, for somebody that's interested in their like productivity and what they're actually doing all day, is to just go sign up for it. It's free. You can get a free version, install it, and then just let it run for a couple weeks or a month, and then put it on your calendar to just go revisit it. And you could actually go back and you could see like, you spent this many hours in Cinema 4D, this many hours in After Effects, this many hours on Reddit, this many hours on Facebook, and just really get an overview of where your time is actually spent. That's been really cool to see that.
Does it break it down per like web page kind of thing? Like if you tab over to one window or a different window?
Yeah, it'll go to each website and just track it. So you can actually see how long you're, you know, in YouTube, how long you're... you know, for me on Facebook, a lot of YouTube stuff recently, we've been switching over to YouTube. Maybe we should talk about that as well on this, but that's been really cool. Just to kind of get an overview. I don't really get too detailed with that stuff, but I think an overview of how many hours I worked this week, how many, you know, just how long I've been in front of the computer. And also how productive I've been has been pretty helpful. I kind of think of it almost like a Fitbit where I don't get really technical on exactly how much it is. I just want to see trends. I just look at it as a super trend kind of thing and go like, wow, like we really, you know, built a lot of stuff in Cinema 4D this month, you know.
On that tip, do you remember me telling you about that thing that I backed on that crowdsourcing website. What the hell is it
called? Oh, Kickstarter?
Kickstarter. The Saint device. Did I remember I told you about that Saint?
You did. Did you get it?
I got it. So I was a backer. It was kind of the same, similar idea. It was like, let's get, you know, it was a productivity tool that's supposed to keep you from going on what they call bad websites or bad applications. And you can like tell them which ones are bad. And it's actually a physical device. I was just looking for it. I think I put it in the closet because here's the bad news. It didn't really work the way that it was supposed to. And it was really kind of distracting in itself because it was, you know, not working and kind of pissing me off. But the idea behind it was that you would essentially, when you're ready to go into like go mode, like I'm going to like plow through some work in cinema or something, you would hit this button and it would put you in like this, they called it monk mode, where you're just like focused like a monk, like on your one task. And if you deviated into another application or maybe a web browser or Facebook, it would warn you. It would say, hey, you know, you're not supposed to be in here, you know, that kind of a thing. But what was nice is that it served for people that are in like a large studio with a bunch of people. And having been in a studio like that, we're in an open office environment. And you got like 20 people behind you and you've got a lot of hustle and bustle. You don't know when somebody's busy or not. So you don't want to always come up to them and ask them a question. What this device would do is like when you went into monk mode, it would turn red. So the idea of it is kind of like those, you know, those Brazilian steakhouses where you like have a green card and you have a red card. And when you're ready for more meat, you throw up the green card. And when you want the meat to stop, you put it on red. That's what this is. But it's like, I'm on red, so don't come hassle me about like some stupid stuff. Like I'm working.
I see. It actually transmitted to your coworkers too that you were like, don't bug me.
I'm on red mode. It's literally like a white device. I wish I had it. I'll try to find it. It's a white device and it would have a red light on it. I think it was a red light. And so that if I'm walking by your desk and I saw it on, I'd be like, oh, he's in monk mode. I'm not going to disturb him. So it was kind of like that sort of thing. But, you know, now that I don't really have a whole lot of coworkers here besides the blog, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But those types of tools are great because it kind of forces you to look at your habits, I think, which is always good.
I'm always curious about those. But you know, when we were in the studio, we just had the headphone rule, which was the same thing. If you see the headphones, that means they're plugged in. Except Nick always had his headphones on. So how do you get his attention?
Right. That's true.
When you just kind of raise your head up above the desk. And if he looks at you, then maybe he'll take a sentence off. And then you lower back down again. It's like, okay. But let's see. A thing I've been using. Well, I recently got a new PC laptop. But I've been using Chrome for a while. I used to love Firefox. I switched to Chrome because Firefox started getting slow. Although I heard Firefox has like a new multi-threaded super version coming out soon. But dude, transferring to the new computer was so easy. Like you signed back into your account and like all of your tabs, all of your, it was like you didn't switch computer. Everything came along with it. But specifically productivity wise, it's just a tiny thing, but it's been very useful for me, is I made two folders at the top of my Chrome. The very first folder is daily. And then the second folder is weekly. And so daily, when I sit down to start my day, I middle mouse button click that, and then it'll open up literally 20 tabs, like 20 tabs across. It says, are you sure you want to do that? And I say, yes. And that will open up like my tech supports and checking comments on the website and checking the status of Half-Res. Everything I need to check every day opens right up. And then I just close my way through the tabs as I do all the different stuff, pop open different forums I should just be kind of glancing at, see if anything important popped up. You check everything. And I have the weekly one, which is like the things that aren't as important, but I want to keep up with it every week. And just something as simple as that has made, you know, that workflow by itself. I also like keeping up with a lot of web comics. So I'm not allowed to look at any comics until I've completed my tabs.
I love it. Yeah, I like that too. Like I started using, like once I figured out like every day I go to these, you know, four or five sites, I just basically have Chrome automatically load. When it opens with those five sites active in tabs. And that's right there. That saves you how much time? I don't know, maybe 45 seconds of, you know, going to all these different websites. It's definitely a time saver.
I took some notes here as well. If anybody wants to click on any of those things, what's the monk mode thing? Actually, I'll ask you after. to get the name.
Yeah, out. I'll get it to you. Yeah,
yeah. Just send me the name.
I'm not sure if they're actually in market right now with it or not. It might still be in kind of beta, but hopefully they've worked out the kinks, because the one that I got was definitely not doing what it was supposed to be doing. The other thing that I played with too was, it didn't actually end up going anywhere, but there's a app that you can get for your tablet, and I think I showed it to you guys at least once. But the idea of, there's this company, the name's going to slip my mind, but I think they were called Quadro, like the graphics card, but not the graphics card. Anyway, so they were saying that like peripherals haven't changed in forever, and like people use a mouse, they use a keyboard, and they use a tablet. But, you know, like, what about, you know, why hasn't it changed? Why haven't we done anything more?
Because we figured it out.
Exactly. So, but their idea was like, okay, what if you could use your iPad, like set your iPad next to your keyboard and have different shortcuts or modes based on what program you're in. You could create a customizable kind of little UI that you would design yourself, and essentially you could actually get really into it and like have like a series of commands that would be called by pushing a button on your iPad, which was kind of cool. I played with it for like a week or two or something like that. And it was fun, but like, I noticed right away that like, if you already have like a full length keyboard with a number pad and you've already got like a mouse or maybe you've got a Wacom or something, you've only got like, I don't have like the wingspan of Nick. You know what I mean? Like I have a much smaller wingspan. So like another peripheral that's even like 2 feet away feels like I'm all of a sudden on the Enterprise, like trying to like, you know, twiddle a bunch of knobs that are way too far away.
And not to mention the iPad, the viewing angle would probably be way off at that point. It's so far away that if you were to click, it's not where the iPad thinks you're clicking.
Well, it's like I have like one of those, the covers that like fold up, you know, so that like tilts it at like an angle, like about like that and stuff. So it wasn't too bad, but I even like, I thought, you know, wow, this is going to be cool. And I even made like a whole Cinema 4D, they call them palettes, where you can like customize a palette to work in whatever application you have up. So I had a palette where I could like make a new scene in Cinema. I could hit render. And then I just thought to myself, like, what am I doing? Like, after a while you played with it and you're like, do I really need this? You know, it's like one of those things that like sounded really cool and like, it was different and interesting and the UI was pretty, but then that one day you look at it and you're like, what am I doing? Like, I know the shortcut on my keyboard. Like,
why am I reaching over here?
Yeah. So it's like, you find like there's certain productivity tools that actually are counterproductive. And
you're anything that abstracts, can go the way of like, oh, this is really helpful if it abstracts it in a way that is like useful. But then as soon as it abstracts it to a point where it's just tedious, it's like, well, I'll just do the like keyboard shortcut.
Right.
Like, I'll just remember that. Or like Chris has a folder full of, you know, like things he needs to do every day instead of like an app with a button to press to set it up, you know?
Well, there's so much front end work there. Like, for my daily tab, I just drag a link in, boom, done. And then tomorrow, one button click, I've got all the tabs. Yours is like, okay, let's sit down for an hour. Oh, wait, you know what? I don't like that button where it is. Let me scoot it over to this spot or remap it here. And then reach way over. It's like, no, it's faster to just be right here on my keyboard.
I know, man. And that's kind of the way it was too. It was like, I felt like, okay, I think I was just a sucker for like a really good looking UI. And it actually is a really, really pretty UI. And like, it just looked really cool. And I'm like, oh man, it's like futuristic having your iPad up next to you. And then you're just like, wait a minute. Like, this is total, you know, form before function.
Yeah.
And like, it didn't make any sense. So I stopped.
It reminds me of those toys. Like, I would really get obsessed about, I really need that toy when I was a kid. But the commercials just made it look so cool. And I'm like, wait, I remember now, my living room doesn't look like this castle did. Like, once you get it home and on the carpet, it's like, oh,
never mind. Yeah. No, I mean, like, that's true though. Like, cause I think as designers, we have like this appreciation for aesthetically, you know, whatever we find aesthetically pleasing, we kind of like almost fall in love with that idea. And you start chasing the idea and instead of really what, you know, what was it supposed to do? What was its function? And yeah, I find myself now with workflow stuff trying to simplify and not complicate, I guess.
Whatever has the fewest number of clicks.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I tell you, I already have like four more things I could talk about. Maybe this should be at least every other week or so, we just all bring one to the table and kind of describe it. Because I think we all, you know, are using computers all day and it's just constant, right? You know, so maybe we think about this every week, just kind of bring one and describe how it helps our workflow and kind of talk about it that way. Does that sound good?
Works for me.
Cool.
Sweet. Well, with the time we got, I figured we'd do some Grayscale Gorilla news. We got a lot of stuff coming up in the next week there. And then see where it goes from there. You know, hey folks, we're making this up as we go along a little bit. But I think as we figure this out, it'll drive the structure. And that's actually a good point. If you guys have a topic or anything, you know, you guys are listening to this going like, I really wish you guys would actually talk about these things. Drop them in the comments, put it on YouTube, or on the blog post here, where the show notes are, which will be on Grayscale Gorilla under podcast. If you just search podcast, one of these episodes should pop up. In GSG news, we got half res. That's probably the biggest thing in the next week. It's September 14th in Chicago in the Midwest. If you're around, it's a motion graphics conference. It started off as, there you go. It started off, as kind of a celebration of the Chicago C4D scene once a year to kind of build a larger thing every year.
Big blowout meetup.
Yeah, like the big celebration meetup. And it's really turned into this incredible conference. More and more people every year show up to it. If you want to go, all you have to do is just go sign up at halfres.com. I'm going to put that in the show notes as well. And this year, the people that are coming out that I'm talking to is just really cool. People that we haven't seen come out. We got a rumor, a pretty strong rumor here. I think Beeple will be there.
And
I think we're going to do a Q&A with Beeple. So if you're listening to this podcast and have a question for Beeple, hit me up on hit up Grayscale Gorilla on Twitter. Make sure you put in halfres, the hashtag #halfres, so that we can kind of see it, and then ask people a question, because I'll be on stage with them asking some questions. That'll be super fun. He's right up in Wisconsin, so he's traveling down to Chicago.
Yeah, where in Wisconsin is? Where does he live in Wisconsin? I was trying to figure that out.
Well, write that question to Twitter at hashtag #halfres.
Let's ask him. Where do you live again? He's been making incredible stuff. That one with the running, like, people with the butts hanging out was like my favorite thing he's made in a couple years. It's just so adorable. I love that thing. We'll link that up as well. We'll link up halfres. Sorry, I'm like taking notes in my head to type all this. There we go. But halfres is big. This year's theme is all about the kind of the past of where we came from and into the future and where we're going. We're at kind of a big transition, I feel, with all these new renderers coming out and all this technology and the GPU, CPU stuff that's happening. We're really getting into this point where 3D in general is kind of becoming almost a new thing. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Chad has a presentation. Chris has a presentation all about early versions of Cinema 4D. And Chad, what are you talking about at halfres?
I'm going to just kind of talk about how the state of 3D, I think, is kind of is a really exciting time, and how technology and both hardware and software have kind of democratized 3D. And I'm going to talk a little bit about where 3D was, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and how different it is now, and how exciting it is to kind of like be able to do the things that we're able to do these days that were unheard of 10, 15 years ago. And just kind of a state of the union of where we are as an industry.
That'll be great. Then we have Nick and Eric from Run, Kick, Shout. They're going to do a presentation all about kind of the business side of this industry. They recently started a studio, I guess you would call it. Yeah. And they're going to go through, you know, some of the things they went through to make their own motion design 3D studio. And then, of course, we got Beeple on stage. I'm going to try to feed him as many beers as possible. And then ask them some questions. So keep those coming. So that's Half Res September 14th. If you haven't, if you're listening to this before then, get your butt to Chicago. We'd love to see you. People fly in from all over to come hang out. So we'd love to have you there.
Prizes.
And we got tons of awesome sponsors and prizes. We're going to actually have a blog post out in the next week or so all about the sponsors and the prizes. So I'm going to link that up in the show notes as well. So thanks to all of them for making it happen.
And if you're in Chicago, make sure you actually sign up so we can see how many people are coming. That's an important note. Don't just assume like, oh, I'll just show up. No. Sign up. Tell your friends. Tell the other coworkers in the studio. We have room to grow. So,
there have definitely been years we have to push people away.
Yeah, no, we turn people away. That's why we keep on growing the venue bigger and bigger and bigger. But this time we did a big jump so we could stay here for a few years.
Yeah, let us know.
The venue is awesome, actually. It's a really cool venue.
And if you're listening to this and it's not middle of 2016, join us next year. Sign up. Halfres.com. Be there. It is fun. We also, what else are we working on? We're working on, this is a little behind the scenes, I guess. Maybe this is interesting to people. We're working on a new store and a new site in general. So we're actually cleaning up some of the WordPress stuff behind the scenes, moving to a new store system, cart system, that should make things a lot easier, not just for customers coming in, but for on our side as well, changing images and videos and really adding new stuff to the store. So that'll be in the next month or so. Keep an eye out for that. And then we got HDRI Link. I know we've been talking a lot about in the last 6 months or so. I think we introduced it at NAB. Was that right?
Yep. That was the first time we showed it.
So that... image-based lighting, especially with all these new renderers popping up, is really kind of taken off. And especially with GPU rendering, it kind of sped it up a lot. Image-based lighting used to really, you needed GI basically to run it to make it look really good. And a lot of us learning on a laptop or on an iMac just really didn't have the horsepower to take advantage of it. And I think with this new GPU movement, with the new physical renderer, with a lot of these things, image-based lighting really kind of took off, and HDRI Link is a way for us to actually make it available to all the renderers and really make it fast, make that setup really quick. So I guess this demo is a little bit more visual than what we could do here, but look for a lot of news with Link. We're really excited about it. We started shipping it out to some beta users to test, and we've gotten some beautiful stuff back through Octane, through Arnold. So look for that really soon. Any other HDRI Link news from you guys?
It's really amazing. And I can't wait to get it out, because I think that I probably have used it on almost every single thing that I've done since NAB, probably. Like every render, every thing that I'm lighting or anything, it's starting with that. And then maybe I'm adding a few other like lights here and there. But I think, yeah, it's exciting to, number one, it's exciting because it's really fun to use. But then the way that Chris and the development team built it, it's so versatile, and I'm on beta for a lot of different renderers, and I have not found a renderer yet that it does not work with.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. Chris and the team did a great job on it, and it's, you know, for those of you thinking like, I haven't seen this thing, what are they talking about? You know, when we built the latest version of HDRI Studio, what really stood out is the new browser system. So what that gives us the ability to do is open up a browser full of HDRs, right? And you could choose what packs and stuff you own. And the real key of it is opening up a browser and clicking on some of the lighting setups and instantly being able to see it in Cinema. And you know my spiel on, you know, seeing as soon as possible like what your difference is in lighting and texturing and all that stuff. The ability to load up a bunch of different HDRs and kind of test them out and give them a trial in your scene is really powerful, especially when you're like, all right, what should this look like? And you can open up dozens and check out the lighting. It's even more powerful in something like Arnold and Octane, where the results can be seen in like milliseconds, like when you click it and it just starts popping up. So if you imagine, you know, a browser full of HDRs that you can kind of demo on your current scene, that's where HDRI Link is going. It'll be really fun. I'm excited to show off more of that.
Yeah, I think that it solved that problem for me where like, oh, I want to look for an HDRI to like light the scene. Let me like hit file browse. And on PC, you can't see an HDR or an EXR in a file browser. Like you have That's no true. Idea what it looks like until you open it up. And by then, you've already gone through the process of like clicking on it, opening it, waiting for it to reload and refresh, and then seeing right. it. And then you're like, nah, that's not the one I want. And then you start that. Yeah, and you just keep doing that process over again. So unless you know which map you want to use and you use the same one all the time, which I don't, I like to vary it up. That process is a big pain, but this takes that pain away and makes it much faster to audition different HDRIs and stuff.
For me, I mean, I didn't do a lot of HDR stuff or ever GI. But I just remember like whenever I wanted an HDR, it'd be like, okay, go to the Finder window, search .hdr. Whichever one pops up, that's what's going in. Like, and it's like, oh, do you want to copy it in your scene file? And then, so I had the same one. It was at like that kitchen HDR that came with Cinema or something a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I have like 30 copies of that just in different folders. And now it's like, nope, like just going right through. And I think David is going to explode if we don't get Link out soon because he wants to show it off because he's using it, I think, more than you do, Chad.
Yeah, and when you play with it in Octane, like, the way David and I have, like, you know, and you have multiple graphics cards and whatnot, it's insane. Like, just like, it's like instant, like, oh, let me try this one. Let me try that one. Let me try this one. Let me try that one. And you start to like go a little like crazy trying a million of them.
We're excited. Hope. I dare not say another date on Link.
Yeah, I'm scared to say anything since I'm on development on that. Like, I'm not sure what's safe to talk about.
If That's anybody awesome. Wants a feature, you know, just drop it in the comments. And...
Oh, boy.
No. We are Link is getting really close, and we're excited to get that out. That's going to be really fun to get out there and just see how all the stuff that people use it. Like, just like David, you know, David Brodeur and his Instagram feed has been going nuts lately with really cool Octane stuff. And it's just cool to hear that he uses it on every one.
Is he coming out to Afrin?
Yeah, he'll be there. Sweet. Wait. Yeah, he will be there.
I think so, yeah. He said he was.
Oh, I wanted to also mention I have been doing a Facebook Live video. So if you're not sick of my face or voice yet, check out our Facebook page. I've been doing like an hour of Q&A on Fridays just to say hi. And I've also been talking a little bit about, you know, some of the ways to, you know, get a job and kind of learn about the career of motion design and not just the tools, but, you know, really learn all the different types of things that you really need to learn to do this for a living, to make this stuff and get a job. So I used to do a lot more of that back in whenever that was, 2009, 2010. Is it 2010? It's not 2010.
2010s.
Yeah.
It's the 2010s.
The aughts. Back in the aughts.
But I think, you know, getting more into that, that's kind of why this format I think is interesting, to really start learning some of the things that are not necessarily all about just Cinema 4D, to really get a wider kind of knowledge base on some of the things you might want to learn about to do this for a living, you know, or to get better at it, or to get better clients and all that kind of stuff. So I think Half-Res will be a huge part of that, getting those guys there, and then also these kind of things as well. So I also have here new stuff on YouTube. So if you haven't checked out our YouTube channel, we have been putting out a ton of new stuff. In fact, I think in the last month, there's been over 10, 15 new videos over there. So if you haven't checked it out, we've also been kind of remastering some of our favorite tutorials and putting them on YouTube as well. So what was that old NBC thing? Like, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
Yeah.
Right. So check that out. There's been some really cool. Yeah. Some classics, some GSG classics
out of really. The GSG vault. Come.
That's right. Here you go.
MoGraph.
You know, it's really cool. The only thing you have to watch out for with, well, one of the big things you have to watch out for with watching older tutorials is really just the reflection channel. Almost everything else, Maxon's done a really good job of kind of keeping things where they are, keeping the naming of things where they are. Mm-hmm. I would say things like HyperNURBS, used to be called HyperNURBS?
Yeah, now it's Subdivision Surface.
Now it's Subdivision Surface, so if you ever see that in a tutorial. They moved the dynamics stuff early on, so all the early Mo dynamics stuff used to be set up a little bit different than is now, but over the last 6 years, it's been similar. But really, it's reflection and reflectance is really the big one. How many 100 tutorials have I done where I go make a reflection in using the reflection channel, and now it's called reflectance. So,
well, literally every single one of your tutorials.
What are you trying to say?
I'm pretty new to it, so like I don't see. I guess I don't experience that as much. I guess, but it is pretty. It's pretty insane. If that's the only thing that's really that different over this many years, like that's pretty good.
I gotta say, yeah. I've been tinkering with an old version of Cinema, getting ready for my presentation. And
oh, that's right.
Like, they've added in new, like there's a simulation drop down now, and then there's like different drop downs that didn't used to be there, but all the old ones are still there. And all, like 99% of the time, the same buttons are in there, and everything's been consistent. So,
Yeah, I think other than render settings would be the only other thing, like the way physical render settings are much different than the old GI settings, and also in the way that GI almost goes away with the new physical and the new reflectance as well. So that's something that could get a little confusing to some of you. But I think with all these new renders popping up, there's really going to be a kind of, you know, way to make tutorials that's like, all right, we made everything move and we made it all work. And now what what render are we going to use?
The render
gonna be,
wars.
It's going to be interesting. Well, so that's what's going on in Grayscale Gorilla. We went through some lists here, and maybe we could leave everybody with something fun, you know, that they're either maybe a little unrelated, a little bit about what you've been up to, you know, outside of work or anything. Anything fun you guys seen or something online or something offline that you've been interested in? Chad, we'll start with you.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
Going straight to you, buddy. I just realized now we haven't introduced anybody.
I was thinking about it.
People listening.
I'm sure
that you're going to record an intro. So
this is Chad. This is what Chad sounds like.
Hi, I am Chad.
This is what Chris sounds like.
Hello, this is Chris.
And this is what Nick sounds like. Hey, it's Nick here. Sorry about that. We'll put that at the beginning. anything fun off the line?
I'm trying to teach myself to do hard surface modeling in a NURBS modeling program, and that's only because I'm a huge fan. You guys know this artist Vitaly Bulgarov? Do you know that guy?
Mm-mm.
So
put it in the notes.
Yeah, Vitaly. I'm probably butchering his name, but I think his name is Vitaly Bulgarov. He's a concept artist that does these amazing killer mech robot models, and he sells like kit bashes of like different parts and pieces that you can buy. And I've been following him for a while, and I not that long ago I listened to a podcast. I think it was oh God, Ash Thorpe did on his podcast. He interviewed him and talked a bit about his process. And he mentioned that he uses like a hard surface NURBS modeling program. I think he used either MOI or
like a Fusion 360 modeling program. So I made, I'm making myself like, and I kind of already knew MOI, which is like a NURBS based modeler, but I don't own it anymore. So I'm trying to like teach myself that again and like make myself learn that just because it's fascinating to me. That's it for me.
Chris, what have you been up to, man?
Let's see. I spent far too much time over the weekend watching an old a YouTuber I used to follow back in the day, and I unsubscribed because I kind of got disinterested, and I went and checked back into all their old videos, and this is a little bit off the grid, but his name is Jamie Mantzell, and I'll send you the link for that. But he's like this, I don't know, he's this awesome crazy guy who like lives off the grid and like builds his own like hydroelectric stuff, and then he just moved from the United States to like somewhere in Central America or something, and he built a boat from just fiberglass from scratch. He just lays out a sheet of metal, he paints it, and built this giant pontoon boat, and he's a crazy guy, and he does what he wants to do all the time, and he's nuts, and it's just a lot of fun watching his videos. Like, so he goes a little off the rails sometimes for stuff I would do, but like a lot of it's just really inspiring, where it's like, I don't think I could ever do that, but he like bought an island in the middle of nowhere, like 25 acres, and he's building boats and building a house and building a castle on an island because he thinks it would be cool. Like he wow. programs video games and sells like robot parts and just does so many crazy off the wall things. It's just a lot of fun to watch. So I spent far too many hours catching up on like 2 years worth of his videos.
I love when you find somebody like that, that you kind of obsess over, and then you realize they have like 4 years worth of stuff, and you're like, yeah. Oh, this is now my weekend.
Yeah, it's funny how YouTube has kind of become that, you know, like it's a place where you can like literally just not stop watching some subject matter.
Yeah, and they've been doing really good job with like the recommendation kind of stuff. You can kind of trust them in a way. They really recommend some good stuff.
Yeah.
And there's so much good content now.
Well, and we don't have time, I think, in this one for it, but at some point I want one of these to be us talking about our favorite kind of content like that, because I don't have TV anymore. I just do YouTube, and I always need more channels to follow. And I probably already have all the ones everybody's going to suggest, but I always want more. So we'll do that other time.
Yeah, now I'm challenged to stump you.
See, now, yeah, I instantly have three of them in my head, so I'm going to write those down.
Yeah, we'll do that next time.
But, is that what they call a teaser? So I have been reading all the Austin Kleon books, Steal Like an Artist, and then I think the other one's called Share Like an Artist. He also has a Steal Like an Artist journal, and once I got into him, I just got all three of his books, and I've always liked books like that. Books like It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Think You Are, I think is what the other one is called. I'm going to try to link all these up. Really short books that just give you a mindset of how to approach your work and how to approach kind of living in a way. A lot of that stuff's kind of abstracted out to just how to live your life with more like openness. I love books like that. So he's been really cool. I've been kind of rereading through those. I tend to usually listen to books, but with a book like that, it's just so they either don't exist on audio form, or they're just such short reads that it just makes sense to have. So I would recommend those books for sure. The other thing is that has popped up in my head recently is just drones. Like drone filming. So somehow in the last year, they went from these more like complicated things to steer and control and set up to now with something like the Phantom 4, which I'm researching right now, partly because our buddy Brad Chmielewski got one and is like live streaming it every day. It's been really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So I just been doing research on that, looking at how easy those things are now to kind of get off the ground literally and start filming. The cameras are all built in. They have these iPad apps. I'm sure many of you know this stuff, but as you could tell with the Google stuff, I tend to be a little bit behind sometimes. It's been really cool just to see how easy that stuff is and really understanding that it's not going to be difficult to make these things work. It's really about the art you can make with them. So just thinking about it in that way. you know, and every time I get into these things, you start meeting other people that are into it kind of by accident. I just happen to sit down next to somebody that races drones every weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I had a long conversation with them and what's been going on with that scene. So that's just kind of stuff I randomly get interested in. I'll try to link up some of these drone racing. There we go. But yeah, that was my weekend. And
all right, we got to wrap this up like in 30 seconds. My computer's saying the hard drive's about to explode from being full.
Well, that's as good a reason as any.
That's
guys,
what you
thanks
to exit.
We'll do this again. And thank you guys for stopping in. And from all of us here at Grayscale Gorilla, we'll see you in another podcast really soon. Is this where we wave?
Everybody sure. Wave. Bye-bye, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
I got to stop recording now. I have to. Bye.
Cooper, come say goodbye. No? All right, fine.
Well, that's one way to end it, forcefully.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to hit stop.